Because if you're the person who's on the receiving end of advice all the time, somebody else's advice monster keeps picking them up and whacking them around, it's a disempowering experience. You're being told you're not good enough. You're not good enough to figure this out. You're not smart enough. You're not experienced enough. You're not moral enough. You're not senior enough. You're not important enough. Just not good enough.
Welcome to the Mindful Communication Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Miller. And on today's episode, I sit down with Michael Bungay Stanier, also known as MBS. Michael is at the forefront of shaping how organizations around the world make being coach-like an essential leadership behavior and competency. His book, The Coaching Habit, is a best-selling coaching book with over 700,000 copies sold. And he's the author of his newest book, The Advice Trap: Be Humble, Stay Curious, and Change the Way You Lead Forever. I absolutely loved this interview. Michael's an amazing personality to have on the show. He's so funny, he's witty, and he's really great at rolling with the punches. And what's so great is he has this awesome insight as a coach, what it means to be a coach and what it means to bring that coach-like thinking and coach-like ways of being into our communication with other people. And we also spent a bunch of time talking about his book, The Advice Trap, which is a common communication tactic that we use that can often be very ineffective. In the first half of the interview, we spend a little bit of time getting to know more about Michael and finding out what some common mistakes we make when we jump to advice instead of getting a little bit more curious. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
It is really good to be here. Coming to you in the Antipodes, down in South Africa, which is amazing. This is kind of the power of technology, tested like never before in this age of self-isolation.
Here we go, the Cape Town-Toronto connection. We're getting this started.
Nice.
So I want to get us kicked off, actually. Some of our listeners might not know that much about you.
What? And, how is that even possible?
It blows my mind, too. And I want to actually know a little bit about your background.
Sure.
And specifically how you got into coaching in general. Yeah.
So the geographic background is I'm Australian, so hence the Antipodean kind of connection. Left Australia when I was in my mid-20s, went and studied in England. Finished studying in England, got a job in England, worked in England for a while, then went to Boston, then went to Toronto. So in that peripatetic life, how did I end up coaching? Well, it started, honestly, with being a teenager in Canberra, my hometown, and sitting with friends and being in conversations, you know, teenager conversations, which are all full of drama and angst and all of that. And going, look, I'm pretty good at listening to these conversations, but I just don't know what I'm doing. I mean, it's just like, should I be offering advice? Should I not be offering advice? Are there better questions for me to ask? I don't know. So I went and did some learning. I volunteered at a youth crisis hotline, a kind of suicide hotline for kids and young people. And that's what first introduced me to let's call it a therapeutic approach to asking questions. We studied some very basic Rogerian counseling, which basically just goes, look, there's whatever is on the surface, there's probably something below it. So stay curious and ask some good questions. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is good. And I did that through my university time. And by the time I ended up living in London and working in London, the rise of coaching happened. You could see it across the ocean in California. And of course, if you're in England, you treat anything from California with a due amount of kind of skepticism because, you know, flaky Californian. So you're like, okay.
Right, yeah.
it sounds like interesting, but it's probably, who knows what the hell's going on there.
Yeah.
And, but I was watching it going, there might be something there. And when I moved with my company from London to Boston, I actually hired my first coach and went, okay, let me test this out. What's it like being coached? Is this something that might be a fit for me? This is in the late 90s now. And I wouldn't have said my first coach was a fantastic coach, but she was good enough to make me go, oh, I get this and I understand it. And I think I could do this. I think I could be actually part of this. So when I moved to Toronto in 2001, I did my first official coach training. I trained with the CTI, Coaches Training Institute. And I was like, oh, this is great. This kind of confirms a bunch of stuff I already knew. And I started building a coaching practice. I'm like, great. this is just the culmination of my lifetime journey, build a coaching practice, be a coach. And guess what? It turns out that I didn't love running a coaching practice. I'm like, I love the power of coaching, but the ongoingness of a coaching relationship and the lack of showing off, because I like being in front of a crowd and I like performing and I like teaching. I was like, you know what? First of all, I think I'm a good coach, but I'm maybe not a great coach. And secondly, of all the things I could be doing in this world, is this the thing that is having the most impact, could make the most difference, which is most my kind of great work, my most genius work? Probably not. So I dismantled my coaching practice and started moving into this process where I spend time now, which is effectively writing books and teaching people to be more coach-like. Because I'm on a real mission to try and make coaching feel less weird to normal people. And I mean, like, so I think people like you and me, like, we get it. We're like, oh, we love coaching. Coaching is awesome. But for most people, coaching is mysterious and complicated and confusing and slightly alienating. And like, I don't know what you're even talking about. And that's the barrier that I'm really committed to trying to break down.
So why don't you take a moment here and dispel some of that lack of clarity? What would you say is coaching, to make it more clear for some of our listeners?
So here's how I frame coaching. I frame it not as a formal relationship, not as a profession, but what I'm interested in is coaching as an everyday way of being with each other, an everyday way of engaging with somebody. So I almost stopped calling it coaching. I go, look, what I want is not for people to be coaches, but I want people to be more coach-like. Mm-hmm. And then when people go, well, what does that mean? I give people a very specific behavioral-based definition. Here it is. I want you to stay curious a little bit longer. I want you to rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly. That's it. It's as simple and as difficult as that. Stay curious a bit longer. Rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly. So it's really being a champion of the power of curiosity.
So, and that perfectly leads into what your book really is about. It's the advice trap. And you talk a lot about that, this idea of staying curious a little longer. So why do you want to try and stay curious a little bit longer? What does that open up?
Yeah, it typically creates better outcomes left, right, and center. And here's what I mean. And I have to start always with a caveat to say, hear this, all you lovely people who are listening to this conversation. I am not saying advice is bad. I mean, advice is really good. Advice is, this podcast is an advice-laden podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, advice is a key part of the currency of civilization. So let's not make the mistake to go, oh, Michael's anti-advice. No, not at all. What I'm trying to shift is people having advice giving as their default response to what's going on. And I think this is what's true for most of us. Somebody starts talking and before we know it, this urge to leap in and tell them stuff just overtakes us. And this is what I've called the advice monster, this thing that just looms up going, oh, the way I add value is to leap in and give advice to people.
Yeah.
And that's what this new book is all about, because, you know, you and I were just chatting before we hit the record button and you're like, you know, I read The Coaching Habit that came out 4 years ago. I liked it. And you kind of you threw out the idea of an advice monster in a sentence. It really was. It was a throwaway idea. I'm like, oh, I like that metaphor.
Sentence. Yeah.
It's a cool metaphor. And having talked about it and taught it for 4 years, people keep coming back to this idea of going, oh, I've got an advice monster. Oh, yes, I do. I feel it. I see it. I have it. And I'm like, okay, let's dig into that. And what I realized was the advice monster was an expression of the challenge of change. Why it's so hard to shift our behavior to be curious a little bit longer. But the benefits are significant. And I'll give you three key benefits.
Yeah, please.
The first is this. You make the person on the other end feel better and smarter and more empowered. Because if you're the person who's on the receiving end of advice all the time, somebody else's advice monster keeps picking them up and whacking them around, it's a disempowering experience. You're being told you're not good enough. You're not good enough to figure this out. You're not smart enough. You're not experienced enough. You're not moral enough. You're not senior enough. You're not important enough. You're just not good enough. So if you can slow down the rush to advice, you have a better chance of inviting that other person to step in and step up. So that's good. That's a good start.
Yeah.
But wait, there's more. Here's the second advantage of giving less advice. You stop becoming the bottleneck in this relationship, in this team, in this organization. Because if you have framed yourself as the person who has the answers, then everybody just goes, right, I'll just go to Jonathan and go tell me what you think. Because, you know, you always need to have the answer, so tell me what the answer is. Mm-hmm. And that frees up two things. It stops you being this bottleneck, but it also stops you carrying this heavy and impossible burden of, I have to have the answer. I need to know everything that's going on. Because you pause for a moment and you're like, look, the very little you know and that you think is good advice is either hopelessly outdated or wrong, or you can just look it up in Google and get a better answer. So it frees you up of that waiting. So there's two reasons why giving less advice is beneficial. It's better for them and it's better for you. But it's also better as an outcome. Because if you stay curious a little bit longer, you're more likely to figure out what the real challenge is, and you're more likely to come up with solutions that solve the real challenge. So you mm-hmm. also have a better outcome as a result of that.
So that's really clear. And I mean, I think I can resonate with a number of those examples, especially just the idea of a better outcome, like right at the end. And empowering other people as well to find their own answers.
Yeah.
And that kind of you allude to something in the book, and I'm wondering if you could explore this a little bit. It's this idea that learning doesn't happen when you tell them something.
Yeah.
It happens when they figure it out for themselves. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, the best way to think about it is think of all the advice you've been given in your life. It's like vast. People are always giving you advice. And yeah. honestly, think how much of it you ignore. I mean, most of it. Most of it you go, interesting. Yeah, okay, sure. And you're like, in your head, you're like, I'll just ignore that because that's nuts. Why would I follow that advice? And then some of the advice you do follow, and it's like, it wasn't that good. You're disappointed by that. So what I would love people to do, and this is regardless of what your formal role is in life, whether you are a manager or a coach or a leader or an executive or a teacher or a parent or just a random human being. I mean, I think that means I've covered everybody. I'd love you to go, look, one of the most powerful roles you can play is that of a teacher. You help people learn. You help people get smarter all around you. It's like, okay, I can do that. But how do you do that? Well, you have to understand how people learn. People do not learn when you tell them stuff. It's frustrating. It's annoying. It goes in one ear. It goes out the other. It's one of the heartbreaking things about writing a book is you write a book and, you know, first of all, most people don't buy the book. Second one, the people who do buy the book, a healthy percentage of people never actually open it. It just sits on a shelf somewhere. Thirdly, the people who do open it, often they don't get past the first chapter. And then finally, the small number of people who read the book from the start to the finish, they forget most of it. So you're like, I mean, even you, Jonathan, I know you liked the book, you read the book, you made notes on the book, and you probably went back and flicked through it as preparation for this interview, and you're like, oh, I'd forgotten he said that.
Right.
So there we go.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is, they don't learn when they do stuff. They don't even really learn when learn when you tell them stuff. They don't even really learn when they do stuff. I mean, they do a little bit, but actually the powerful learning moment happens when you create just a heartbeat of space for people to reflect and learn and see the aha. And I think this is where I really champion the seventh question. There are seven questions mentioned in the Coaching Habit book. This is the last of them. And the learning question is, what was most useful here for you? What was most useful, most valuable here for you?
Yeah, that's right.
And for those of you who are listening right now, just think of this podcast so far. We've been going maybe 10 minutes, maybe a little bit more. And I know part of you is going, this is just fabulous. I mean, Jonathan's so smart, so good looking, such a brilliant interviewer. Michael, he's good enough. He's entertaining. He gets excited, but we'll forgive him about that. He forgets stuff. He's old. What can you do? But even as you're going through this at the moment and you're going, I'm enjoying this podcast, you're forgetting stuff. Even as we're happening, it's already slipping out of your brain. So even if I stop you and I go, so far, what's been most useful or most valuable here for you? I'm disrupting the flow. I'm putting the responsibility of this back on you. I'm forcing you to stop and think and make some connections, actually create some new neural pathways. I mean, let's do it with Jonathan. So Jonathan, you've been listening in, you know some of this stuff, but out of everything that's been going on, what's been most useful or most valuable here for you so far?
I think what's been most valuable for me is just really having that reminder of why advice is not useful, as I think. And I will also add in that just a reminder that this is not about necessarily stopping advice, but just like staying curious a little bit longer, right?
Nice. There we go. So Jonathan's pulled out something. He's put it into his own words by saying it in his own way and saying it himself. He's now taking ownership of that learning, ownership of that aha, and it's just sunk in a little more deeply. Mm-hmm. I mean, he runs podcast interviews all the time. So he's like, oh, it's good, and then he's on to the next one. What I'm trying to do is make this podcast experience a little stickier for him and a little stickier for you. And that question, which you can use all the time with your team, with your vendors, your customers, your kids, what was helpful here? What was most useful? What was most valuable? What are you taking away? What do you know now that you didn't know before? These are all great variations on that learning question, because what you're trying to do is just create a little ripple in the fabric of time and space to say, before you go, capture the learning.
And I noticed that you, I'm so glad you covered that, because you know, I having read your book, and hopefully our listeners will as well, you do that at the end of each chapter. You really ask the reader to take the time to stop and to actually write out what it is that they are they're taking away from that chapter. And that's that same idea, right? It's really having that learning stick.
And I know a bunch of readers wouldn't do that, but I'm trying to, first of all, I'm trying to make sure that the book practices what it preaches. So if I'm saying you need to disrupt the flow and create moments for reflection, it would be weird if I didn't have that in the book somewhere, somehow. And I'm just, you know, with coaching and leading and just being a parent and doing all that stuff, so much, I think, is create the space and invite the person in. And sometimes they'll come in and sometimes they won't. And your job is to not take it too personally, but just keep creating the space and going, great, I'm still going to ask you at the end of every conversation, what was useful here? What was most valuable? I'm still going to keep inviting you in to keep learning.
You're listening to the Mindful Communication Podcast, and today I'm sitting down with Michael Bungay Stanier, also known as MBS. What I've taken away from the first half of this interview is really that deep dive into advice giving, why it can be a trap, how easy it is to fall into that trap, and why it's not as useful as we think it is. And in the second half of this interview, we continue a little bit about that and also dive into some larger topics around giving and receiving feedback, dealing with failure, and more. Stay tuned. I had a question for you. You know, one thing that we're kind of especially, you know, we're facing as a society is this idea of us going more and more virtual. What are your thoughts on coaching virtually, and not just virtually, like on the phone, like via video, which I can think actually can be quite effective, but it's especially when we're entering that realm of text, which so many of us love to default to. What are your thoughts around that?
So I would say that everything becomes possible. Everything depends on how you define coaching. Here's a reminder of how I define coaching. Can you stay curious a little bit longer? Can you rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly? Here's what that gives permission for. It gives permission for you to be more coach-like in every single interaction you have with anybody. So whether you are texting somebody or on Slack with them or emailing them or asynchronous with them, you know, they're asleep at the moment and you're just writing to them in some way, whether you're on a call with them, whether you're on a podcast interview with them, the opportunity to be curious a little bit longer is always there, and to slow down the rush to action and advice. And I'll give you a really specific example that may resonate for some people.
Yeah, please.
Because there are some people who perhaps manage, you know, have a kind of management role. And if you do, you probably have somebody on your team now or in the past who loves to write you the long emails? You know, most people are like pretty brief, but some people are like, oh my God, yeah. This goes on for pages and it's paragraphs. Oh, yeah. And when those emails show up in your inbox, honestly, your heart sinks a little bit because you can't just write a quick email back going, perfect, go for it, or I agree, or I disagree, or whatever. You're like, okay, I've got to engage with this. So you read it. And then you're like, I didn't quite understand it. So you read it again. All right, you already wasted 10 minutes. All right, you now read it a third time, but this time at the top of the email in your reply, you go, see my answers below. And then at the end of every paragraph, you start chipping in thoughts and opinions and ideas and solutions and whatever it might be. And I can save you some time. Here's how what happens when you get an email like that. What you do is you hit reply and you go, wow, Jonathan, there's a lot here. Look, before I jump in, let me ask you, what's the real challenge here for you? And then you hit send. And of course, their brain will explode. They'll freak out because they're used to you doing their work for them and trying to untangle this long email and just make it less rambly and try and figure out what's really going on. But you're actually saying to them, hey, this is your problem and your job, and I'm going to help you figure it out, but not by telling you the answer, but by asking you some questions. Mm. So here's how I stay curious. Here's how I stay lazy. It's another one of my core principles. Here's how I stay often. That's a third of the three principles. Be lazy, be curious, be often, as a way of saying, look, in any interaction, you can be a bit more coach-like.
One thing you mentioned in the book is, there's actually a bunch of things you mentioned in the book, but one of them is specifically, I was interested in, is the idea of feedback. I think this is a pretty popular topic. We all deal with feedback, particularly in the workplace. And a lot of us become defensive around it, or at least others, not us, of course, becomes defensive around it. How do we, do you have any tips, ideas on how we can get better at giving and receiving that kind of feedback?
Sure. Well, before I give there, I give you some tips. Actually, it's a perfect opportunity. I wanted to give you some quick feedback about how this podcast is going so far.
Okay, let's do it. Give me that feedback.
No, so I'm teasing, but not really. Because here's what I wanted you to hear. Can you hear how nervous laugh? He was like that. First of all, that moment of silence. And in his head is like,
silence for sure.
Oh my God, what's about to happen here? Because honestly, what I did is I triggered his lizard brain. And if you've listened to Jonathan's episode with Mark Bowden, you'll probably have talked about this. Which is like this amygdala, this part of your brain, which is the fight or flight. And so, look, Jonathan and I barely know each other. And who am I? I'm this random dude. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to give you some feedback on your podcast. And he's like, look, I don't know who you are, and we don't have a relationship, and I don't care. And nonetheless, I'm freaking out because I don't know what you're going to say. I don't know how this is going to work. And that moment of laughter, of relief, when I'm like, I'm just kidding. So that's how we all react to that moment where somebody goes, I'm going to give you some feedback. We all freak out.
Totally. So, that just happened to me, I swear, the other day. Someone said, hey, can I give you some feedback on this whole process? And I froze because I just assumed the worst. And it was actually like wonderful, positive feedback.
Exactly. So there is a number of things to manage on both sides of the equation here. I think... if you're wanting to give somebody feedback, the first thing to say is the more often you give feedback, the less weird it becomes. So if giving feedback is an everyday part of how you work with somebody, then it just stops having the weight of every 6 months somebody pops up and goes, I'm going to give you some feedback now. You're like, okay, well, that can't be good. The second piece is, and we talk about this a bit in the book, this whole idea of the terror quotient, which is the neuroscience of engagement. And there are all sorts of little things you can do to make it feel less of a threat, because that's what your brain is responding to. It's responding to the lack of certainty, the lack of autonomy that they have in this, the lack of status that they have in this conversation, the lack of rank. And there's lots of ways you can balance the process by making the conversation feel more certain to them, making them feel that they're more engaged, making them feel that they have some choices in their Because I could have said, Jonathan, I could have said, hey, Jonathan, I've got some thoughts on the podcast. I'd love to share them with you. They're basically 98% great because I love it. And I've got one really good suggestion that I think could really take you to the next level. And if you're open to it, I'm wondering if you'd like to do that now, if you should do it later, and do you want to do it over the Zoom, or should I come into your office and have that conversation? So I've just given you a whole bunch of choices that has mm-hmm. mostly calmed you down rather than wound you up.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's that autonomy piece you're talking about, right?
Right. So I'm forever, as a facilitator, a coach, a leader, trying to give away as many choices as I can to the other person because it increases their sense of autonomy. It actually increases their autonomy, but also their sense of autonomy, because I know that's a way of keeping them more engaged in the work and in the conversation. And if you're on the other side and you're like receiving feedback, I've got two things to offer up. One is API, which is to assume positive intent, which mm-hmm. is most of the people most of the time are trying to give you feedback because they're trying to be helpful. So not always, you know, sometimes people are out to just, I'm here to crush your soul. But if you assume positive intent, that's helpful. And mm-hmm. then that's balanced by knowing that you are at choice to take that feedback or not. So often, honestly, often feedback is somebody else projecting a whole bunch of stuff on you about them, and it will often tell you more about them than it will tell you about you. So I always go, okay, that's interesting. That's not necessarily the truth, but it's some version of the truth. What's useful here for me? And I try and figure out what's useful, and I then just ignore the rest.
That's a great way, I think, to kind of keep our minds under control when we are receiving that feedback. Because at the end, you know, it's their opinions and they're not necessarily going to apply, right?
I have some people come up to me going, can I give you some feedback about your presentation? And most of the time I'm like, no, thanks. Like, I know my presentation's good and I know I'm a good speaker. And honestly, I don't know who you are and I don't know your level of expertise and I don't know why I would listen to feedback from you.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's super helpful. I think our listeners will find that really helpful.
Good.
While I have you here, I one other thing that you did talk about in the book was this idea of getting better at dealing with failure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any suggestions as we kind of take on being better communicators, staying curious longer? How do we help, whether it's our coworkers or people in our lives, just coaching them through failure? Because I know for me at least, I want to go in and I want to save them. I want to at least them, but that usually doesn't work really well. So any thoughts around that?
Well, it's tricky because we all love to cross a finish line. Nobody loves to fall down and skin their knee and look like an idiot.
Yeah.
But part of, so I'm not sure how to help others. All I know is for myself, part of what I really work with is going, look, I probably fail more often than I succeed. So how about I reset failure is the norm rather than the, you know, the fake expectation that that's, you know, I'll never fail. I'm always going to fail. My standard is just to fail. I mean, there's a great IDEO quote, fail faster to succeed sooner. And part of what this comes to, I think, is if you're a coach, what I would call social contracting. I took this term from Peter Block. Social contract is when you have a conversation about how we're going to work together, not just what are we working on. And the temptation is always to talk about what we're working on. Like, for instance, I know that you're committed to help staff members who are helping youth being entrepreneurs in South Africa to succeed. And the temptation, of course, is to go, right, this is awesome. Let's talk about youth. Let's talk about teens. Let's talk about entrepreneur. Let's talk about coaching skills and to go all about the content. And I really love the insight that it's helpful to have a meta conversation. You know, when you've been coached or taught or facilitated by somebody and it's been helpful and useful, what happened? What did you do? What did they do? When it wasn't that good, what happened? What did you do? What did they do? How do you deal with failure? You know, when things go off the rails, and it will go off the rails, everything goes off the rails, you know, what's your unilateral action? You know, do you run away? Do you fight? Do you pretend it's not happening? What's going on for you? And then, you know, share your answers as well. Mm-hmm. You have a conversation about how are we going to work on, what are our patterns, what makes a relationship work, what makes it doesn't work. And it creates a robustness and a resilience to the relationship. And it means that, for instance, if you're coaching somebody and they fail, you don't have to have this kind of conversation, do I celebrate that or not celebrate it? What if I over-celebrate it, will they hate me? You go, we've talked about this. You're like, hey, this is the failure we talked about. This is perfect.
Right.
So how do we celebrate this? Hmm. And I'm not gonna rescue you on this, let me be clear. And I'm not gonna let you wallow in that. Or I am gonna let you wallow in it for 2 minutes. Like, just whinge about it for 2 minutes. And then we get to learn from it. So what was useful about this? What was valuable about this? What do you know now that you didn't know before? How do you mourn what has just passed and didn't come to fruition? And now what?
Wow. Those are some really powerful questions. And I love that idea of setting up the context almost like in advance.
Totally.
Like you said, creating the fact that you're probably going to fail. So how are we going to deal with it in advance so that when the time comes, we're not kind of moping around, we're actually moving forward, we're learning.
Honestly, if you're not failing, what does that mean? I mean, there's a quote, you know, all ships are safe in a harbor, but that's not what ships are built for. You're like, if you're not failing, you're clearly not trying very hard.
Yeah. So listen, you know, we have, you have The Coaching Habit and your wonderful new book, The Advice Trap. So say, you know, we get a lot of people reading The Advice Trap. We really are taming that advice monster. We're staying curious longer. And at the end of the day, there's so many more people in this world being more coach-like. What kind of world is that for you?
So that's a nice question. You know, what I hope for people is they have the courage to make bold and better choices. And to do that, you have to feel a sense of autonomy and self-sufficiency and confidence. And you have to have a sense of self. And what I would hope is, if you get to tame your advice monster, you get to allow other people to step in and step up and become a better version of themselves. And my hypothesis is that if you're a better version of yourself, then you're more likely to make the braver, bolder, better choices.
So it's really just about having people live into their full potential so that they can live really into their best life.
Exactly. I mean, it feels tired and cliched and, you know, very life coachy to say it, but hey, that's it. It's like, what if you were 20% more, not just in not just the medals you've collected, but, you know, you've evolved to keep being the best and better version of yourself. How does that ripple out to the world?
That's beautiful. As we kind of come to the end of this interview, we talked about your book, The Advice Trap. You also have this wonderful this thing running on your website, this Year of Living Brilliantly. Could you tell us a little bit about that real quick?
Sure. Thanks for asking about that. There's a bunch of good freebies that are on the website and come at you through the book as well. The Year of Living Brilliantly is one of them. 52 teachers, 52 different teachers over 52 weeks. And I just went around and went, I want a diverse, cool, interesting, random collection of people to teach their best stuff. And each week you get a 2 to 6 minute video of a teacher. And he or she is saying, look, here's what I'm known for. Let me give you an insight. Let me give you my best practical stuff. And, you know, they're great people. You know, we've got a couple of thousand people in right at the start. And there's this great buzz in the community and in the comments. There's this sense of connection and support and learning. It is pretty awesome to watch. So there's that. The other resource that people will like is at theadvicetrap.com, which is the website for the book where a bunch of the free stuff is, which you can find at mbs.works, which is a kind of umbrella site. there is a questionnaire to you figure out which of the three advice monsters is most kind of powerful in you. Is it save it? Is it tell it? Is it control it? So if the advice monster metaphor resonates for you and you'd like to go a little deeper into figuring out how you show up with that, then you'll love the questionnaire. And it's, you know, it's 20 questions, no more than 5 minutes at max to get it done.
Yeah. And it's a lovely questionnaire. I did it. I believe that was tell it, a sunny yellow, something like that.
Yeah.
Tell it.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my advice monster right there.
Perfect.
Michael, thank you again for coming on the show. Thank you for your contribution in terms of having us all be a little bit more curious for a little bit longer.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Big thanks goes out to MBS for coming on to the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe. Also, give it a great rating and review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find me on Instagram at Mindful Communication, on Facebook at Mindful Comms, C-O-M-M-S, and also on YouTube at Mindful Communication. All those channels, you're going to find lots of amazing tips, tricks, and just some juicy content that you can use in your life when it comes to communication and beyond. And of course, if you're looking to upgrade your communication skills, make sure to get in touch with me on my website, mindfulcommunication.me. You'll also find my website in the show notes. Today's music was provided by Shinogo. You can find Shinogo's music wherever you get your music. Once again, you've been listening to the Mindful Communication Podcast. I've been your host, Jonathan Miller. Thanks for tuning in.